When I was 19, I did. Did you enjoy it? Sam asked Tiffany. Clementine gave him a look. What? Sam lifted his hands. I'm just asking if she enjoyed a previous occupation. That's a valid question.
I loved it, said Tiffany.
For the most part, it was like any job, good parts and bad parts, but I mostly enjoyed it.
Good money? Continued Sam. Great money, said Tiffany. That's why I did it. I was doing my degree, and I could earn so much more money doing that than being a checkout chick.
I was a checkout chick, said Clementine. I didn't especially love it, by the way, if anyone is interested.
Such a pity. You would have made a wonderful stripper, darling, said Sam.
Thank you, sweetheart, said Clementine evenly.
You could have made your cello faces as you spun around the pole. That would have got you some good tips.
Sam threw back his head, closed his eyes, and made his eyebrows go up and down, presumably in imitation of Clementine's face as she played the cello. Clementine looked down at the table and pressed her fingertips to her forehead. Her whole body shook. Tiffany stared. Was she crying?
She's laughing, said Erica dismissively. You won't be able to get any sense out of her for the next few minutes.
Oliver cleared his throat. I read an article recently about a move to make pole dancing an Olympic sport, he said. Apparently it's very athletic. You need good core strength.
Tiffany had to smile at the poor fellow doing his level best to manoeuvre the conversation back into safe, middle-class dinner party conversation territory.
Oh, yes, Oliver. It's very athletic, said Vid meaningfully, one eyebrow lifted, and Clementine dissolved again.
Tiffany thought how much simpler the world would be if everyone shared Vid's almost childlike approach to all things sexual. Vid liked sex in the same way he liked classical music and blue cheese and fast cars. To him, it was all the same, the good stuff of life. It was just naked, pretty dancing girls in a club. What was the big deal?
Erica turned pointedly in her seat to look over her shoulder towards the kids.
So, does your daughter, she said to Tiffany.
Dakota knows I was a dancer.
Tiffany lifted her chin. Don't you freaking well question my parenting choices. I'll wait till she's older to give her more details than that.
Vid's older daughters and ex-wife didn't know either.
Oh, God, the judgment that would come her way from his daughters, who dressed like Kardashians but behaved around Tiffany as if they had the moral high ground normally reserved for nuns. If they ever found out, they would leap on that secret like rabid dogs.
Right, said Erica. Of course. Right.
Clementine lifted her head and ran her fingertips beneath her eyes. Her voice still trembled with laughter.
So, forgive me, because I guess I've led a very, you know, vanilla life, she said.
I don't know about that, said Sam. What are you implying? I read 50 Shades of Grey. I studied it. I tried to set up the study as the Red Room of Pain.
Clementine elbowed him. I'm just fascinated. Did you find it?
Well, I don't know. Where to start? Weren't the men watching you kind of sleazy?
Of course, some of them were. But most of them were just ordinary blokes.
I wasn't sleazy, said Vid. Oh, well, maybe I was a little bit sleazy. In a good way, sleazy.
So, did you go to those places often?
Clementine asked him. And Tiffany could hear the effort she was making to keep her tone clear of judgment. This was what Vid never understood, and Tiffany always forgot.
People had such complicated feelings when they heard that she'd been a dancer. It was all mixed up with their feelings about sex, which sadly, for most people, were always inextricably linked with shame and class and morality. Some people thought she was confessing to an illegal act. And for the women, there were issues relating to body image and jealousy and insecurity, and the men didn't want to look too interested, even though they were generally very interested. And some men got that angry, defensive look, as if she were trying to trick them into revealing a weakness. And most people, men and women, wanted to giggle like teenagers but didn't know if they should. It was a freaking minefield. Never again, Vid, never again. "Sure, I went lots," said Vid easily. "When my marriage broke up, my friends wanted to take me out, and, you know, my friends didn't go to symphonies or whatever. You know, they went to clubs. And when I saw this woman dance, well, she blew my mind. She just blew my mind." He put a pretend gun to his head, pulled a pretend trigger, and made his fingertips explode. "That's why I recognized her straight away at that auction, even though she had her clothes on." Vid slapped his knee and roared with laughter. Clementine and Sam chuckled in a kind of horrified way, while Erica frowned and poor Oliver blushed. "Anyway," said Tiffany, "that's probably enough of that." There was a sudden, discordant shriek. "Money!" Chapter 36. It was raining so hard, Clementine didn't hear the front door open. She jumped when she saw Sam materialize in the doorway to Holly's room, his blue and white pinstriped shirt so wet it was transparent. "He scared the life out of me," she said, her hand to her chest. "Why are you home so early?" She knew it sounded like an accusation. She should have said maybe, "This is a nice surprise," and then said, conversationally, gently, "Why so early, honey?" She'd never called him honey in her life. Sam plucked at the saturated fabric of his shirt. "What are you doing?" he said. "Looking for something," she said, "as usual." She was sitting on Holly's bed with a pile of clothes in front of her, searching for Holly's strawberry top, a white, long-sleeved top with a giant strawberry on the front that Holly needed right now if she was to ever feel happiness again, and which, of course, was nowhere to be found. She felt strangely self-conscious. Would she normally have jumped to her feet at the sight of Sam and kissed him hello? She couldn't remember. It was so strange that she would even consider this the correct etiquette for greeting her husband. She didn't particularly want to hug him when he was once again soaked. Nobody in Sydney could be surprised by rain anymore. You were an idiot if you found yourself caught in the rain. It was all anyone could talk about. Umbrella sales had gone up by 40%. But ever since the rain had started, Sam left every day for the ferry without an umbrella or raincoat. She watched him each morning from the kitchen window, bolting along the footpath through the rain, his briefcase held over his head, and the sight of his bobbing body disappearing into the distance made her want to laugh and cry. Maybe it was a form of masochism. He thought he didn't deserve an umbrella. He probably thought she didn't deserve one either. "Why are you home so early?" she said again. "Well, I got your message." Sam's face was a mask of anxiety with a hint of aggressive defensiveness. "So I left work early." "My message that said Holly was perfectly fine," said Clementine. My message that said there was nothing to worry about. This is the second time she's had this stomach thing, said Sam. I assume you saw her in the living room, said Clementine, happily playing on the iPad without a care in the world. I think we need to get her checked out. It could be her appendix or something. It could come and go. Yeah, it comes when she's at school, and it goes when she's playing on the iPad. She's playing us, said Clementine. As soon as I got her in the car, she was fine. She talked the whole way home about her party. She wants to invite Dakota, by the way. She said the last part quickly, without looking at him. Dakota, said Sam. He straightened as if sensing danger. That Dakota? Yes, that Dakota. She can't invite her, said Sam. Obviously. Jesus! I told her that Dakota was probably too big for a sixth birthday party, and she had a meltdown. She said that we told her she could invite whoever she wanted. And we did say that. We made kind of a big deal of it. Yeah, well, we met anyone except Dakota, said Sam. She was inconsolable. She doesn't even know Dakota, said Sam. He pulled his shirt out of the waistband of his trousers and went to wring it with his hands, and then reconsidered. She met her one time. Like you said, she's too old. She wouldn't want to come to Holly's party. Well, anyway, I gave in, said Clementine. She was becoming hysterical. It was kind of frightening. You just said yourself that she was putting it on about the stomach thing, said Sam. So she's putting it on about Dakota, too. She played you, Clementine. He said this mockingly. Before, he'd always teased, but he'd never mocked. I don't think so, said Clementine. Look, Holly wants to invite her, and it's her party, and she's obviously going through a bad stage at the moment, which is maybe not unexpected. So if she wants to have Dakota at her party, she's having Dakota at her party. It's not that big a deal. Sam clenched his jaw. She's not coming. Clementine threw her hands up. She is coming. They stared at each other. How did they get out of this? How did a couple resolve something like this, where there was no possibility of compromise, where one person had to give in? What happened if no one gave in? I called Erica today, she said, to change the subject. I told her that I'd donate my eggs. Right, said Sam. He began to take his shirt off. Clementine found herself not quite, but almost averting her eyes in the polite way you did when someone else's husband took off their shirt. She was funny about it, said Clementine. I think she definitely overheard what I said that day when we were upstairs. Those horrible things I said. I need to get changed, said Sam distractedly, as if she were boring him. So you're fine with me donating my eggs? Asked Clementine, without making eye contact, as if it were an inconsequential question. It's your decision, said Sam. She's your friend. Nothing to do with me. His disinterest felt almost exquisitely painful, as if it were a pain she needed, a boil she needed lanced. So you definitely don't want another baby? She said. There it was again, like at dinner the other night at the restaurant. The desire to push him, to shove him off this ledge where they were stranded. Another baby, said Sam. He hung his wet shirt on the handle of Holly's door. Us? Have another baby? You're not serious. Oh, Right, said Clementine. She piled clothes on top of each other. You haven't seen Holly's strawberry top, have you? It's vanished. She looked around her in frustration and tried not to cry. Ugh, I can't stand it. Why do things keep vanishing? Chapter 37, The Day of the Barbecue. Mummy! It was only Holly calling for her mother's attention. Holly, sighed Clementine, you gave me a fright. You don't need to call out as if it's a matter of life or death each time. She stood up and left the table, carefully avoiding Sam's eyes. She couldn't wait to be alone with him in the car to go over the night's events. They'd be dining out on the story of this night forever. It was getting curiouser and curiouser. They'd gone down the rabbit hole. Erica, who had never wanted children, now wanted babies. Oliver wanted Clementine's eggs. Their hostess used to be a stripper. Have you ever heard of the boy who called Wolf? She said to Holly.
I don't know anyone called Wolf. I've been calling you a million trillion times.
Holly looked up at her accusingly from her spot in the swinging chair next to Dakota.
Sorry, said Clementine. What is it? Why is your face all red? Asked Holly.
I don't know, said Clementine. She pressed cold fingertips to her hot face. The air was getting cooler. Are you girls warm enough?
Yes, said Holly. Look at this game Dakota showed us. It's so awesome.
She pointed at some colourful animated game on the screen of the iPad in Dakota's hand.
Wow, said Clementine, staring at the game without seeing it. Awesome.
Thank you for taking care of them like this, said Clementine to Dakota. You let me know when you've had enough, okay? When you get bored?
Ruby and I are not boring, protested Holly.
Dakota smiled conspiratorially up at Clementine. She seemed like such a serious, good little girl. It was hard to believe she was the daughter of such colourful people as Vid and Tiffany.
All okay here? You girls being good?
Sam stood next to her. Clementine glanced up and met his eyes. There was a spark there, a spark she hadn't seen for a while. Maybe they'd have good sex tonight, proper good sex, the kind that used to be a given, not that weirdly uncomfortable let's get this over with sex they'd been having for the last couple of years. Something had gone wrong with their sex life after Ruby was born, or it had for Clementine. Sometimes she felt a sense of loss, of actual grief over the loss of their sex life. And other times she wondered if it was all in her head, if she was being typically melodramatic about something natural and inevitable. It happened to everyone. It was called getting stale. It was called marriage. She sometimes felt a terrible sense of inappropriateness during sex, almost an incestuous feeling. It was like she and Sam were old, beloved friends who, for some reason, a religious or legal or medical reason, were obligated to have sex every few weeks in front of a small panel of impartial observers. And it wasn't exactly unpleasant to have sex with an attractive old friend, but it was awkward and a relief for all concerned when it was done. She'd never spoken about it to Sam. How could she put that into words? Sometimes our sex life feels incestuous and religious and ever so slightly yucky, Sam, don't you think? Any suggestions? There were no words available to her, and besides, she loathed talking about sex. It made her think of her mother and, strangely enough, of Erica. All that open talk in the car about contraception and self-respect. She knew that part of the problem was that the girls were such unsettled sleepers. It meant that both Clementine and Sam were on edge the whole time, listening for that inevitable cry that could break the spell at any moment. With limited time, you couldn't linger. They had to get down to business, to the old tried and tested moves and positions, because otherwise it would be yet another case of mission abort. It meant there was always a certain move-it-along tension to the proceedings. Sometimes she even caught herself thinking, "Hurry, hurry!" It also meant that they never stopped being Mummy and Daddy. And there was something so frumpy and ordinary and unglamorous about Mummy and Daddy having quick, furtive sex while their children slept. These days, Sam wasn't suggesting sex that often, which made Clementine feel kind of hurt. She assumed he still found her attractive. It would be all too easy to let herself fall into the body-loathing abyss. The world was so eager to give her a shove, but she was standing firm for now. At the same time, she'd often feel relieved when they both rolled over to face different directions, because honestly, who could be bothered? She suspected that he felt exactly the same mixture of hurt and relief. And the thought of him feeling relief about not having to have sex with her hurt her further, even though she felt the same way. And so it went on. But now there was a spark, and she felt a great sense of exhilaration and relief. So this was all they needed. A barbecue with a friendly ex-stripper and a music-appreciating electrician who looked like Tony Soprano. She'd always fancied Tony Soprano. "Why are you laughing, Mummy?" said Holly. "I'm not laughing," said Clementine. "I'm smiling. I'm just happy." She caught Dakota giving her a dubious look, and she tried to pull herself together. "Daddy is all red too," said Holly. "Pink," Ruby removed her thumb from her mouth to comment. "Daddy is pink." "Pink," agreed Holly. "I expect he's a bit hot and bothered," said Clementine. "Why?" said Holly. "Maybe I need a cold shower," said Sam, discreetly pinching the flesh of Clementine's upper arm. "I should stand in the fountain, eh?"
"Silly Daddy," said Ruby.
Chapter 38. The Day of the Barbecue. "You okay?" said Oliver quietly, his hand on Erica's arm. Erica felt a surge of irritability. "Yes? Why? Do I not look okay?" Was she squinting? It wasn't her fault. The hazy afternoon light was making everything blur. The lack of visibility was affecting her balance, too. She kept finding herself tipping forward or backward and having to anchor herself by grabbing the side of the table. The music in the cabana was up quite loud now, making her head thump. Tiffany was playing November Rain, which was significant in some way, something to do with her sordid past. Erica didn't want to know. "You just seem like you're drinking more than usual," said Oliver. And for a moment, Erica felt outraged because she was always, always the most sober person at any party. Often, she didn't bother to drink at all. She didn't like the taste of it that much, although the wine tonight seemed very good, very smooth and delicious, probably prohibitively expensive. "Well, I'm not," she said. "Sorry," said Oliver. Her outrage melted away because it wasn't Oliver's fault that his parents were alcoholics. "I'm fine," she said, and she inclined her body toward him with the vague idea that she might hug him, even though they were both sitting in separate chairs. She wanted to hug him for his childhood, for the time when he was 7 and he couldn't wake up his drunk parents to get out of bed to drive him to school. And he had a maths test that morning, and he sat on the end of their bed and cried with frustration. and now his parents told it as a hilarious story. The time Oliver cried because he missed a maths test. Our little accountant in the making. And each time they told it, Oliver obligingly chuckled, except with the saddest eyes you'd ever seen. But as she leaned toward him, Oliver held out his hands as if to catch her from falling, an appalled expression on his face, as if she were about to make a spectacle of herself, and Erica sat back with a little tch sound. She couldn't give her husband a hug, but it was fine for Tiffany, at a family barbecue, to casually mention that she used to be a pole dancer. A stripper, no less. Clementine and Sam were giddy over it. Clementine's face was luminous right now. Clementine had always been susceptible to excitement. As a teenager, she used to get herself worked up when they went to parties together. Certain types of music sent her mad with happiness, as did certain types of cocktails. You could never tell whether the music or the alcohol was making her drunker. More than once, Erica, always the designated driver, had had to peel her off some guy, and sometimes those guys had gotten aggressive, and the next morning Clementine would thank her and say, "Thank God I didn't sleep with him." And Erica would feel a warm glow of satisfaction like a best friend in a movie. But of course they weren't like best friends in a movie, were they? What were the precise words she'd overheard? "It's like she always wants another piece of me." The shame rose like bile, and Erica put down her empty wine glass too hard on the table. Tiffany, predictably, picked up the wine bottle to refill it. She must have done waitressing as well as stripping. Maybe she'd been one of those topless waitresses. Why not? Marvellous. How interesting. What fun. "That's your phone ringing, Vid," said Tiffany as she poured the wine. Vid picked up his phone and his face turned sour when he saw the name. "It's our friend, Harry," he said. "From next door. It will be the music, you know, offending him. It offends him when anyone is happy." "You'd better answer," said Tiffany. "He kicked my dog today," said Vid. "I don't have to answer him. He's always been on the nasty side, but harming an innocent animal? That was my final straw, you know." "Harry didn't really kick the dog, did he?" said Oliver. "We only suspect it," said Tiffany. "No proof." She picked up the phone. "Hello, Harry," she said. "Are we too loud?" "Not loud at all," grumbled Vid. "It's daytime." "Yes," said Tiffany into the phone. "No, that's fine. We'll turn it down. Sorry to disturb you." She gave Vid his phone back and turned down the volume on the music. said Vid. "You should have turned it up." "We probably had it a bit too loud," said Tiffany. "He's an old man. We have to be respectful."
"He's not respectful to us," grumbled Vid.
He turned to Clementine. It was obvious he was developing quite the crush on her.
"So, listen, tell me, do you play your cello at weddings? Because my eldest daughter is getting married this spring, you know."
"I play in a string quartet," said Clementine. "We're called Passing Notes. You could book us if you like. Will the food be good?"
"Will the food be good?" repeated Vid with extravagant emphasis. "Of course the food will be good. The food will be magnificent."
"That's how Clementine and I met," said Sam. "She was playing at my friend's wedding."
"Ah, of course,"
said Vid, as if he'd been there.
And you thought, who is that beautiful cellist?
Clementine pretended to smooth her hair. Yes, that's right.
What was your pickup line? Tiffany asked Sam.
Bet you wish you chose the flute, thought Erica gloomily as she drained her glass. She and Oliver might as well go back home and leave these four to it. They were all so busy flirting and finding each other fascinating.
I waited until they'd finished playing and they were packing away their instruments and, you know, Clementine's not tall. The cello is nearly as big as her, so I said, which I thought was pretty brilliant, bet you wish you chose the flute.
Genius!
Vid slapped his leg.
Not really, said Sam. People say it to cellists all the time. It's like the worst possible cliche I could have chosen.
Of course it was, said Vid. I would never have said that.
But she took pity on me anyway, said Sam.
Mummy, I'm cold.
Ruby appeared at Clementine's side, whisk under her arm like a teddy bear.
Do you want to wear your special new coat Grandma got you? Said Clementine.
Clementine's mother had bought the girls beautiful little winter coats she'd seen on special in David Jones. Erica knew this because she'd been shopping with Pam when she found them. Erica liked going shopping with Pam because she rarely, if ever, actually bought anything. This drove Clementine nuts, whereas Erica loved watching Pam frown while she turned a garment inside out to study the quality of the lining, then slowly take her reading glasses out of her handbag so she could confirm the price tag, then hem and haw, and finally say, nope. The cute little woolen coats, with their black toggles and hoods, however, had been impossible for Pam to resist, and Erica had agreed, even though they probably wouldn't get that much wear in Sydney's climate. As Clementine removed Ruby's fairy wings and helped her into her pink coat, Holly's was green, Erica didn't say anything about being there when the coats were purchased. She had learned over the years that although Clementine didn't want to go shopping with her mother, she didn't seem especially pleased to hear that Erica had gone shopping with her. She never said anything. It was just a flicker. A Clementine flicker that said, stop stealing my mother. You've got your own. The pink coat, Erica saw with satisfaction, fit Ruby perfectly. She'd told Pam to get the bigger size.
You look like Little Pink Riding Hood, said Oliver, as Ruby twirled around in her coat.
Ruby chuckled. She got the joke, the clever little thing. She climbed onto her mother's lap and snuggled up contentedly, as if Clementine were a favourite couch, and stuck her thumb in her mouth.
So does Whisk ever actually whisk?
Tiffany asked Clementine.
No. When Whisk became Whisk, she wasn't allowed to do anything so menial, said Clementine. Her whisking days were over.
Ruby took her thumb out of her mouth.
Shh! Whisk is sleepy.
She caressed Whisk as if it were a baby, and everyone laughed, as she knew they would. Ruby stuck her thumb back in her mouth with a satisfied smirk.
I think Ruby and Whisk must be getting tired, said Clementine. We should be going soon.
But first, you must have dessert, said Vid firmly. I made creme schnitte. It's another old family recipe I got off the internet.
It's a vanilla and custard cream cake, said Tiffany. To die for.
Well then, said Clementine, we better not miss that.
We've got those nice chocolate almonds you brought too, Erica, said Tiffany. I love them. My grandfather used to have them every Christmas. Brings back memories.
Erica smiled thinly back at her. Yeah, sure. They bring back memories. Chocolate nuts were really going to stand up well against to die for creme bloody schnitter. Hey, look, said Oliver, suddenly animated. Kids! He pointed up at a tree toward the back of the garden. Is that a possum I spy? Chapter 39. The freaking rain had gotten louder again. It was starting to do Tiffany's head in. Vid and Tiffany, who had both cancelled appointments so they could stay home for the rest of the day, were having coffee in the kitchen while Dakota watched TV in the adjoining room with Barney curled up on the couch next to her. They were keeping her home from school, of course.
Give the other kids a chance to catch up, said Vid.
Tiffany was still reeling from Dakota's sobbing confession in the back of the car on the side of the road. It was tiny. It was huge. Blind Freddy could have seen it, and yet Tiffany might have missed it forever. If Vid hadn't made his remark about Clementine teaching her the cello, Dakota might never have broken down, and they might never have learned the truth. Tiffany and Vid had both been prepared to sit on either side of Dakota for the whole day, letting her talk, or just being there for her. But Dakota had finally said, guys, don't take this the wrong way, but can I get a bit of space? And she'd made a circular motion with her hands to indicate the space she required around her. She already seemed more like herself, as if that glass bubble she'd encased herself in was already thinning and cracking. It was time to be thinking about dinner, but Tiffany had suddenly developed a craving for chocolate to go with her coffee, and she'd remembered the jar of chocolate almonds sitting in the back of the pantry. Vid grunted as he tried to loosen the lid. What the? His face was red. He'd never been defeated by a lid before. He held it up and examined the label. Where did we get these from, anyway? Erica brought them to the barbecue, said Tiffany. Vid's face shuttered instantly, and Tiffany saw with startled clarity just how affected he still was, even after all these weeks, by what had happened, even though he said he didn't think about it anymore. What a fool she was to have taken his words at face value. Vid was all smoke and mirrors. The more distressed he was, the more he joked.
I think this lid is super glued on, said Vid with a final twist. I really do.
Damn it, said Tiffany. I had a real craving for one. She took the jar from him and began tapping the lid around the edges with a butter knife, as her mother always did.
That won't work, scoffed Vid. Give it back. Let me try again.
Has Clementine called you back yet? Said Tiffany.
No, said Vid.
Do you leave actual messages? Said Tiffany. Or do you just hang up?
Hang up, admitted Vid. Why won't she answer? I thought she liked me.
They wanted Clementine to talk to Dakota, to set the record straight.
She did like you, said Tiffany. She liked you a lot. That's part of the problem.
Vid took the jar from Tiffany and began twisting the lid again, grunting and swearing.
Fuck it! Open, you fucker! We should all just see each other again. That would make us all feel better, I think. This silence, it makes everything bigger, worse. Oh, to hell with this thing.
He gave the lid such a violent wrench, the jar flew from his hands and onto the floor, where it shattered instantly, sending chocolate nuts and glass shards cascading across the tiles.
There you go, said Vid morosely. It's open now.
Chapter 40. The Day of the Barbecue. Do you see it? Look closely. Oliver stood beneath a tree, just outside the cabana, holding Holly up high, his hands gripping her calves as though she were a little circus performer. There was a rustle of leaves and a flash of surprised, bright round eyes as the possum suddenly emerged.
I see it! Shrieked Holly.
It's a ringtail possum, said Oliver. See how he's got the white tip on his tail? Little factoid for you, he's got two thumbs on each front foot to help him climb. Two thumbs. Imagine that.
Good Lord, Oliver would be a wonderful father, thought Clementine, pressing her lips to Ruby's scalp. Maybe she could do it. Give them her eggs. She donated her blood. Why not her eggs? And then she could just forget that the child was biologically hers. It was a state of mind thing.
Be generous, Clementine. Be kind. Not everyone has your good fortune.
Clementine thought of the time her mother invited Erica to come away on a beach holiday with them when they were 13. A holiday Clementine had been desperately anticipating because it would be 2 weeks without that shameful prickly sensation she'd been experiencing every day at school when Erica would hurry up to her each lunchtime and stand far too close, her voice low and intimate. Let's eat lunch over there, somewhere private. Clementine was only a kid. The necessary negotiations, all conducted within the parameters of her mother's all-important code of kindness, felt amazingly complex. Sometimes she'd promise Erica she'd spend just half of lunchtime with her. Sometimes she'd convince Erica to join her with other kids. But Erica was happiest when it was just the two of them. Clementine had other friendships she wanted to cultivate, normal, easy friendships. It felt like Clementine had to make a daily choice, my happiness or her happiness. She'd wanted a holiday with just her big brothers, where she would have been included in their adventures. But instead, it had been a holiday where the boys had gone one way and the girls another. And every single day, Clementine had had to forcibly suppress her rage and disguise her selfishness because poor Erica had never had a family holiday like this, and you had to share what you had. She looked over at Erica, who had sunk down in her chair and was scowling into her wine glass. There was no doubt about it. Erica was tipsy. Was she drinking more than usual because of the awful things she'd overheard? Clementine stretched her arm around Ruby's curved little body to pick up her own wine glass again. Vid and Tiffany stacked plates to take inside.
Let me do it, said Sam to Tiffany.
He stood and held out his hands for the plates.
You relax for a bit.
All right, said Tiffany, handing over the plates and sinking back into her chair. You won't have to ask me twice.
You got the girls? Called Sam to Clementine over his shoulder as he went to follow Vid out of the yard.
Yes, I've got the girls, said Clementine, indicating Ruby on her lap and Holly still with Oliver, checking out the possum.
I think Dakota has gone inside to read a book, said Tiffany, looking around.
Sorry, she does that sometimes. Disappears, and you find her lying on her bed reading.
That's no problem, said Clementine. It was great to have her playing with them for as long as we did.
Dakota is obsessed with reading at the moment, said Tiffany. And Clementine could see by the way she pulled her lips down at the corners that she was trying to conceal her pride.
When I was her age, I was obsessed with makeup and clothes and boys.
Yeah, And I bet the boys were obsessed with you, thought Clementine.
Were you obsessed with music?
Tiffany pulled at a strand of hair that had got caught on her lip.
Literally everything she did was sensual. What would she be like as an old lady?
It was impossible to imagine Tiffany elderly, whereas Clementine only had to glance at Erica frowning ferociously off into the distance to see the old lady she would one day be. The lines between her eyes that would become deep furrows, the slight stoop in her back that would become a hunch. Imagining Erica as a grumpy old lady full of complaints and refutations made Clementine feel fondly toward her. Somehow she knew there would be an unspoken truce on their unspoken battle over God knew what when they were old. They could both surrender to their innate grumpiness. It was going to be a lovely relief.
I guess it was important to me, said Clementine. Music wasn't her obsession so much as her escape. She didn't have to share that world with Erica, except for when she came to watch her perform, but there was enough space between them then, both literally and figuratively.
Were your parents musical? Asked Tiffany.
Not in the slightest, said Clementine. She laughed a little. I'm surrounded by the unmusical. Mom and Dad, Sam, my kids.
Is that tricky? Asked Tiffany.
Tricky? Repeated Clementine. What a funny choice of word. Was it tricky being surrounded by the unmusical?
Nobody could accuse Clementine's parents of being unsupportive. They'd helped her with the money to buy her beautiful Viennese cello. She'd paid back a little over half, and after Ruby was born, her dad told her not to worry about the rest. He'd take it off her inheritance. An instrument that aroused so many conflicting emotions in Clementine, it sometimes felt like a marriage. Her dad was proud of Clementine in a distant, awestruck way. She'd been so touched that time she'd discovered him watching the tennis with a copy of Classical Music for Dummies face down on the couch next to him. But Clementine knew that nothing she played would ever come close to a Johnny Cash song for her dad. Clementine's mother was supportive too, of course she was. After all, she'd been the one to drive Clementine to lessons and auditions and performances without ever a word of complaint. But over the years, Clementine had come to feel that her mother had complicated feelings about her music. It wasn't disapproval. Why would it be? But it often felt like disapproval. She sometimes wondered if Pam saw Clementine's career as flighty or self-indulgent, more like a hobby, especially when compared to Erica's solid, sensible job. When Pam talked to Erica about her work, she nodded along respectfully, whereas Pam seemed to find Clementine's job amusing, a little outlandish.
You're imagining it, Sam always said. He thought it said more about Clementine's resentment toward her mother for making Erica part of her family and thereby forcing a friendship upon her.
You probably felt supplanted by Erica, he'd once said.
No, said Clementine, I just wanted her to go home.
Exactly, said Sam, as if he'd made his point.
And what about Sam? Was it tricky that he wasn't a musician? Sometimes, after a performance, he'd ask her how it had gone, and she'd say, good, and he'd say, that's good, and that would be it. And she'd feel a little wistful, because if he were a fellow musician, she would have had so much more to share with him. She knew lots of couples who worked together in orchestras and talked constantly about work. Ainsley and Hugh, for example, had a pact that they were only allowed to talk about work up until when they crossed the Anzac Bridge, because otherwise it just got too intense. Clementine couldn't imagine that. She and Sam talked about other things. The children, Game of Thrones, their families. They didn't need to talk about music. It didn't matter. Now Erica sat up straight, as though rousing herself. "I was there when Clementine heard the cello for the first time," she said to Tiffany. There was an unmistakable sloppiness to her speech. "One of the boys in our class had a mother who played the cello, and she came in one day and played it for us. I thought it was nice enough, but then I looked over at Clementine, and she looked like she'd found nirvana." Clementine remembered when she'd first heard that luscious sound. She hadn't known a sound like that was possible, and the fact that an ordinary-looking mother had the ability to make it. It was Erica who'd told Clementine she should ask her parents if she could have cello lessons, and Clementine often wondered if it would have occurred to her to have asked. She thought perhaps not. She would have tried to find a way to listen to the cello again, but no one in even her extended family played a stringed instrument. Erica must not remember that she was the one who suggested it, or else she would have found ways to mention it at every opportunity, to take ownership of Clementine's career. "So you two have known each other since you were kids," said Tiffany. "That's great to have a friendship last all these years." "Clementine's mother kind of adopted me," said Erica, "because I didn't have a great home environment." She made air quotes around the words "home environment." "It wasn't really Clementine's choice, was it, Clementine?" Chapter 41. "Thank you for fitting me in today." Erica sat in the blue leather recliner across from her psychologist, who sat in a matching lounge chair angled toward her, as though Erica were a guest on a talk show. There was a large round ottoman in between them, with a box of tissues on it, as if the ottoman were a coffee table. A tiny annoyance. Why not get a coffee table? "No problem at all. I've had a lot of cancellations because of the rain. They're advising people to stay off the roads if possible." Erica's psychologist's name was apparently Marilyn. That's how she'd introduced herself, and that's the name that appeared on her stationery. But as far as Erica was concerned, it was a real error of judgment. Marilyn was entirely the wrong name for her. She looked nothing like a Marilyn. She looked like a Pat. Marilyn bore a startling resemblance to a secretary who had worked for Erica for many years and was correctly, appropriately called Pat. That particular type of round, rosy face and the name Pat were therefore linked together forever in Erica's subconscious. And every time she looked at her psychologist, she had to remind herself, "Not Pat." "This rain really is extraordinary, isn't it?" said Not Pat, looking out the window. There was no way Erica was going to waste a minute of paid time discussing the weather, so she ignored that fatuous remark and launched straight in. "So whenever I get invited to someone's place, I always take a jar of chocolate nuts," she said. "Chocolate almonds." "Yum," said Not Pat cheerily. "I'm not that keen on them myself," said Erica. Not Pat tilted her head. "Why do you take them then?" "Clementine's mother used to take chocolate nuts whenever she went to someone's place," said Erica. "I think she bought them in bulk. She was quite thrifty like that." "She was like a role model for you," suggested Not Pat. "They used to invite me to come with them," said Erica, "to barbecues and things. I always said yes. I was always so happy to get out of my house.
That's understandable, said NotPat. She was looking at Erica curiously.
I'm doing that thing my mum does when she tells a story, said Erica. She rambles. She can't stick to the point. I read that it's quite common with hoarders. They can't keep their conversation in order any better than their homes.
Rambling is good, said NotPat. Actually, I think you're circling. I think you're coming to something.
Well, you know, chocolate nuts aren't really an appropriate hostess gift anymore, said Erica, because of allergies. Everyone has allergies these days. Once, Clementine looked at my jar of nuts and said, You can tell you don't have kids, Erica.
Did that offend you?
Not especially, said Erica, considering. You would think it would have, because we just that day found out that we'd failed another round of IVF. Clementine didn't know that, of course. She would have felt terrible for saying that if she'd known. NotPat tilted her head even farther, like a cute little Disney chipmunk listening out for something in the woods.
You went through IVF, or you're going through IVF?
I know it's strange that I haven't mentioned it up until now, said Erica defensively.
Not strange, said NotPat, but I do find it interesting.
About 8 weeks ago, said Erica, we had a barbecue at our next-door neighbour's place.
Okay, said NotPat. Watch me circle, NotPat.
Yesterday, said Erica, my husband found our neighbour's body. She wondered if she was doing this on purpose. This was what her mother did. She threw people off balance for the pleasure of watching them wobble. It was fun. NotPat definitely wobbled. She was probably regretting right now that she'd agreed to this emergency appointment.
The neighbour who had the barbecue?
No, said Erica. He was on the other side of them. He was an old man. Not an especially nice man. He didn't have friends or family. Everyone is feeling terrible because his body was there for weeks. Except I'm not feeling terrible.
Why is that, do you think?
I don't want to feel terrible, said Erica impatiently. I don't have time to feel terrible. I don't have the space in my head. Look, I don't even know why I mentioned that. It's not relevant. Anyway, we've given up on the IVF because my eggs are rotten, and before the barbecue, we asked Clementine if she would donate eggs to me. To us. NotPat nodded bravely. How did she react? Something happened at the barbecue, said Erica.
What happened?
Poor NotPat looked like she was about to break out in a sweat. The thing is, beforehand, I took one of those tablets you prescribed, said Erica, a whole one. I know you said I should start out with a half or even a quarter, but I took a whole one because I couldn't break it. And then at the barbecue, I think maybe I drank more than I would normally drink. She saw Clementine running about, trying to catch the frothing champagne.
Oh, dear, said NotPat, with a grimace so exaggerated it was almost comical.
As you may know, there's a big warning label on the front of the packet, said Erica. It says the tablets can increase the effects of alcohol, but I just thought, well, I never drink much, I'll be fine. But I had a glass of champagne and maybe I drank it too fast. I was feeling a certain level of stress. Anyway, I think I actually got drunk, which is not something I've ever done, and I have gaps in my memory about that night. Black spots. Like blackouts?
They're probably more like brownouts, said NotPat.
Alcohol affects your ability to transfer your memories from your short-term memory to your long-term memory.
So you think they're gone forever?
NotPat shrugged. Erica glared at her. She didn't pay for shrugging.
Something might trigger a memory for you, said NotPat. A taste, a smell.
Something someone might say that makes you remember. Or sometimes being back in the same place might help. You could return to the scene of the crime, so to speak. She laughed a little at the words, scene of the crime, but Erica didn't smile back. Not Pat's smile vanished.
Right, said Erica. She would think about that later. So anyway, I took chocolate nuts to the barbecue, like I always do.
Not Pat waited.
I guess I was just thinking about all those times that Clementine's mother asked me along to family events, said Erica. Her dad would be driving, her mum would have the jar of nuts on her lap, and I'd be in the back seat with Clementine. Her older brothers were mostly off doing their own thing by then, so it was often just the two of us. I'd be looking out the window, feeling so pleased with myself, so blissful, pretending Clementine and I were sisters and that her parents were my parents. She looked up at Not Pat, surprised to find that this was what she'd been circling, this not exactly shocking little factoid, as Oliver would say. Clementine wasn't blissfully pretending she was my sister. Clementine didn't want me there at all.
Ah, said Not Pat.
I always knew that, of course. Deep down I knew it. But lately I've been trying to put myself in her place, to be the one looking out the other window, the real daughter, with this imposter always hanging about.
Erica looked unseeingly at the plush, padded surface of Not Pat's ottoman.
I wonder how that felt.
Chapter 42, The Day of the Barbecue. Erica had the dangerous, truculent look of a drunk about to reveal secrets. Clementine's stomach tightened.
We're still friends now, aren't we? She said lightly.
Erica made a sound that was almost a guffaw. Dear God, revealing the painful complexities of her friendship with Erica felt like a more intimate, socially unacceptable revelation than the news that Tiffany used to be a stripper. Tiffany cleared her throat, and Clementine watched her make a marginal adjustment of the wine bottle so that it was farther away from Erica.
Excuse me, said Erica. She stood. She didn't sway, but she had the careful stance of an inexperienced passenger on a boat, someone very aware that the ground could move at any moment.
I'll just go inside to the bathroom.
She blinked rapidly.
For a moment.
Ah, there's one right here, said Tiffany, pointing at a door at the back of the cabana.
Of course there was. Clementine's whole family could quite happily have moved into that cabana. But Erica was already heading back into the house.
She's a bit tipsy, I think, said Clementine apologetically, because Erica's strange behaviour was clearly her responsibility.
She thought of their younger years, when Erica would take charge, hailing cabs and making coffee when Clementine drank too much. It was strange to be apologising for Erica.
Probably my fault for refilling her glass too often, said Tiffany. I'll lose my responsible service of liquor licence.
Oh, have you got one? Said Clementine. Maybe that was a requirement for strippers.
Tiffany smiled faintly.
No, she said, just joking.
Clementine's arm ached, so she shifted Ruby's body, trying to get her into a more comfortable position. Judging by how noisily she was sucking her thumb, she was about to fall asleep. But the movement of her arm was enough to stir Ruby, and she suddenly jerked her head.
Holly,
she said indistinctly, speaking around her thumb.
Over there.
Clementine pointed at Oliver and Holly, who were still possum hunting. Ruby slid off Clementine's lap.
Bye,
she said, with a wave of her whisk, and toddled over to them.
That little pink coat is adorable on her,
said Tiffany, as they both watched Oliver bend down to pick up Ruby. She's probably going to complain she's too hot in a minute, said Clementine. It weighs a ton. Clementine looked back at Tiffany, who was scratching something on the side of her neck, but somehow making even that look erotic. What was it like to have a body like that? Did it automatically make you more sexually adventurous because you just looked in the mirror and felt hot? So you were therefore destined to be a stripper? Or were there librarians with bodies like that? Of course, there were librarians exactly like that in porn movies. She was so intrigued, so titillated by this woman. She had another mouthful of wine and leaned across the table. Can I ask you a question? She said. Sure, said Tiffany. Obviously, a lot of men who watched you dance would have been married, right? We didn't get them to do surveys at the door, said Tiffany. But yes, probably. Do you think they were betraying their middle-aged wives at home with the children by, you know, sitting there lusting over a gorgeous 19-year-old? Isn't it effectively infidelity? Their middle-aged wives were probably at home reading 50 Shades of Grey, said Tiffany, or lusting after the lead in a chick flick. But that's fiction, said Clementine. I was fiction, said Tiffany. Right, said Clementine uncertainly. No, you weren't. But do you... Oh! Hundreds of tiny lights suddenly flickered to life, transforming the backyard into a twinkling magical fairyland. It was like the setting for a stage play. That's what happens when you're married to a crazy electrician. They're preset to go on at 5:30 at this time of year, explained Tiffany. We could probably make it even earlier. Hey, look at your kids. Holly and Ruby had lost their minds. They ran in delirious circles around the backyard, laughing and pointing, their bright little faces transfixed, their hands reaching out, clasping and unclasping, as if to catch the lights like bubbles. Barney ran with them, tail wagging, yapping delightedly. Oliver looked on, his hands shoved in his pockets, smiling fiercely at them. Vid and Sam reappeared in the cabana, laden with trays of food. Tiffany and Clementine both stood to help them. And then there was light, said Sam. We should get Vid to come over and do something with our sad old backyard. The girls look like they've never seen electricity before. Oliver came over to the table. So is this the dish you mentioned earlier, Vid? He said in his awkward, earnest way. What did you say it was called?
Creme schnitte, said Vid. You wait. You just wait.
Have you got plates? Tiffany asked him.
Erika is bringing out your good blue plates, said Vid. She's just behind us. And if the little girls don't like my dessert, we have ice creams in the freezer. Although, of course, they will like it.
Tiffany, did I hear you say there was a bathroom through there? Asked Oliver, pointing at the back of the cabana.
Yes, that's it, said Tiffany.
Oliver hurried off. It was just the four of them standing around the end of the table.
Also, I have chosen music to go with my dessert, said Vid.
He picked up his phone again.
No more of this head-banging stuff my wife likes. Clementine, have you heard of someone called Yo-Yo Ma?
He enunciated the name clearly.
He's pretty good, I think.
Clementine smiled at him. He was too adorable. Yes, Vid, I've heard of Yo-Yo Ma. He is pretty good.
Okay. Well, this is him, right? And let me tell you, this is the sound of the taste of my creme schnitzel.
The ineffable sound of Yo-Yo Ma playing the opening movement of Elgar's cello concerto filled the cabana. Clementine shivered. It was glorious. Sam said, "Shall I open these chocolate nuts Erica brought?"
"Oh, yes, please," said Tiffany. "Just what I feel like."
"Like your nuts, then," said Sam.
"I just love sweet-tasting nuts," said Tiffany.
"Is that so?" said Sam, his hand on the lid.
"Oh, stop it. You two are so rude," said Clementine, and felt a burst of warmth, because she could see already how a fun, flirty friendship between them all was about to unfurl.
It would be a friendship involving good food, wine, and music, and there would be a sexual frisson to everything they did. And God knows, her life could do with a bit of sexual frisson. When was the last time she and Sam had even had sex? A week ago? No, 2 weeks ago.
Had they crossed the finishing line?
No, they had not. Holly had called out for a glass of water, please. Her timing was uncannily and hilariously precise. Instead of the painful little foursome with Erica and Oliver, they'd become an easygoing group of six. It would be so much easier to like Erica and Oliver with Vid and Tiffany around as a buffer. Vid and Tiffany were edgier and rawer and richer than all their other nice, normal, middle-class friends. Vid and Tiffany opened up possibilities. Possibilities of exactly what? She didn't know. It didn't matter. It was like that non-specific, anticipatory feeling of being a teenager.
"So I don't see how this creme schnitzel could be any better than your strudel," said Clementine to Vid, as the music billowed and blossomed around her.
He raised an eyebrow.
"Ah, Clementine, you know I am not one to blow my own trumpet, as the saying goes." "Yes, I am. I love to blow my own trumpet." "I'd be a good trumpet player because I have outstanding lung capacity."
He banged his chest, King Kong style.
"You've got the right personality for a trumpeter," said Clementine. "You mean he's full of himself,